Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, this is the show. Welcome back. It's a show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and we're so glad to have you back, and it is Oscar night. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, don't touch that dial, because we'll have it all here on Oscar nights. All the deviants, all the freaks, all the weirdos, and all the creeps as they traipse across the red carpet in Hollywood. You'll get all the news right here. Not, you won't get any of that. We won't be doing any Oscar coverage unless there's some... unless there's a mudslide or something, we would break in with something like that. Something like that were to happen, or if fire were to come down from heaven, or if someone was to turn into a pillar of salt, we would be sure to report on that. But otherwise, this will be an Oscar-free zone here at the Weekly Worldview. And it will just be me and my extremely attractive audio engineer as she helps with musical interludes as the show progresses. And just so glad to have you back on board for another week. And I start out, I seem to always be starting out at Denver Bible Church because that's where I was today. This morning, anyway, like a normal person. Went to church on Sunday and an awesome sermon. Last week was a real downer, talking about how dark and depressing and careening toward hell the secular world is. But Pastor Bob followed that up this week with a sermon on, well, the attributes of God and the Christian life and a lot of wonderful things. It was just a really good sermon. And somewhere in the sermon, he asked about the definition of the word life. Define that word. And he asked, is it easy to define that word? And my gears in my brain locked up, and I thought, well, no, it's actually it's kind of difficult to define life without using living or alive or anything like that in the definition. It's difficult. And the point Pastor Bob was making was that for the secularists and the big bangers and the heathens and the pagans and everybody else, defining life is very difficult. Is it any easier for those of us who have a relationship with the living God? Should be easier. We should be able to figure it out, I think. And so I started noodling around with the idea of the definition of the word of life, well, right there in the middle of the sermon. And not that I ignored the whole rest of the sermon, but I started, my gears unlocked, and I started noodling around with it. On the drive home, I was thinking about it, and then I got home, and I felt a little bit tired, so I took a nap. And I'll tell you, one cannot discount the value of a nap in the middle of the day if one is fatigued. Which I was, because my gears had been turning and locking and grinding in my brain, and that'd take a lot out of a guy. So I took a little nap. In fact, that reminds me, story, a Japanese lady, she's 116 years old. She is, if not the world's oldest person, she's one of them. And one of the secrets she says to her longevity is that she makes sure she sleeps 8 hours a night. Yeah, that was Tomohito Okada. Yeah, she has lived at a retirement home for just the last 18 years. Before that, you know, she was out washing her clothes and, you know, trimming the garden. Anyway, a really encouraging story, 118 years old. What's up with the Japanese living so long? You're bound to outlive me, dear. No doubt about that. But anyway, I started noodling around with this definition of the word life, the concept of life. After I awoke from my nap to ensure my longevity. And here is my definition of life. I just want to get it out there for scholarly review. Want to make sure it's out there for the whole world because I'm trying to save the world here with the show. That's one of the things I'm trying to do here, along with venting my frustrations and making jokes once in a while. But I am trying to save the world, so I want this definition of life to be out there to be reviewed by the scholarly types who tune in to the Worldview every week. And here is my attempt. Define life. an active and influential state of being expressed continually in the eternal Godhead and imparted by him to other beings and organisms in the universe at creation. So there is my definition of life. We'll see how that holds up to scholarly review going forward. I have a number of well-respected scholar types who are reviewing. Actually, they're reviewing an earlier version. I had about 17 different versions of this before I settled on that. But I'd love to hear yours in an email later. Okay? So there we go. Now let's launch into the news of the week. We're going to start in Uganda. Yes, Uganda. Now, I know when anyone hears about Uganda, well, the first thing I always think about is Idi Amin and cannibals and terrorists. Wasn't that Entebbe? That whole thing was at Uganda? Am I mixing that one up? I know Idi Amin was from Uganda, and he was something of a cannibal. But they have a president, a new president down there. Well, he's not new, but he's not Idi Amin, okay? I just want to get that out of the way. The president of Uganda, according to CNN, is President Yoweri Museveni. And he signed anti-homosexuality laws last week down there in Uganda. And he told CNN in an interview that as he was pondering whether or not to sign the new laws criminalizing homosexual behavior, he had a Ugandan scientist review the issue and then report to him on whether or not it was a learned behavior or if people were just born that way or if it was just wonderful and good and full of glitter and even better than being straight. He was open to being persuaded, was President Museveni. And his scientist has returned to him with a report, and he says that based on the report of his Ugandan scientist, he has determined that being homosexual is unnatural, and it's not a human right, and he goes further and says gay people are disgusting. Disgusting, he said. I wonder if Anderson Cooper was interviewing him. Yeah. Or who's the other one? John Lemon. I wonder if Lemon Pledge was interviewing. Can you imagine? Oh, is it Don Lemon? I'm sorry. Don Lemon. Lemon scented. Remember that? Can you imagine if Don Lemon and Anderson Cooper were the interviewing team sitting across from the president down there? That would have been a sight to see. Anyway, he says, quote, "They are disgusting. What sort of people are they? I never knew what they were doing. I've been told recently that what they do is terrible, disgusting. But I was ready to ignore that if there was proof that that's how he is born. Abnormal, you know. But now the proof is not there." Anyway, he signed the law, the new criminalization of homosexuality law. Anyway, a scientist emeritus at the National Institutes of Health here in America, he wrote an open letter to the Ugandan scientist who was advising President Museveni. And an open letter in the New York Times last week. And this scientist says, quote, "There is no scientific evidence that homosexual orientation is a learned behavior or any more than is a heterosexual orientation," unquote. Now, I didn't quote anything scientific. I didn't see any notations here as to what science he was quoting or misquoting or applying or ignoring or anything like that. He just flat out said it, and if you're a scientist and you say it to the New York Times, as long as it's pro-homo and anti-Christ, the New York Times will publish it as if it is the gospel. And so there you have it. Now the White House, as you can well imagine, there's not a lot going on in the world, so the White House had to issue a number of statements. You know, it's a slow news week and all. So the White House issued a statement that they say President Museveni took Uganda a step backward, and his actions will undermine public health, including efforts to fight HIV/AIDS. So do you people know what that is? That's a veiled threat from the American government to pull funds that are currently going to various health officials and their cousins, nephews, mistresses, and concubines. All that money, they're threatening now to pull it, because the president thinks that homos make him sick. I wonder if he owes a royalty to KGov, because I think we were the first over at KGOV.com, one of the first internet radio stations in history. I think we were the first to utter that phrase. Well, he says, gay people are disgusting. We always said homos make us sick. So probably not going to have a trademark infringement case against the President Museveni. But certainly we have advocated that position, or at least expressed that position, that homos indeed make us sick. Yes, and we don't call them gay because they're generally not very happy. That's all. Let's see. Do I have anything else? Oh, the White House says they must repeal this abhorrent law and advocate for the protection of universal human rights of LGBT persons in Uganda and around the world. It's not good enough for Uganda simply to decriminalize homosexual activity and repeal the law. They want them to repeal it and then advocate for homos. You see, people, the homos don't want to be just left alone, and they don't want to be just equal. They want us to admit that they are better than we are. They want us to bow down. And I will not bow. And apparently President Yoweri Museveni will not bow, or at least he hasn't bowed yet. But the Western powers haven't cut off the money that's currently being embezzled that's supposedly going to fight HIV and AIDS. So we'll see what happens on that. Is there anything else? Oh, the UNHCR Commissioner for Human Rights. He says this law violates a host of fundamental human rights, including the right to freedom from discrimination, the right to privacy, the right to freedom of association, and the right to peaceably assemble, the freedom of opinion and expression, and equality before the law. Is there anything else? Is there anything I missed? This violates every single right ever known to man. This is horrible, says the High Commissioner for Human Rights over there at the UN Nations in New York there. All right, so there we have it from Uganda. Meanwhile, back at the farm, in Washington, D.C., the mayor there has announced that the city will recognize gender dysphoria as a medical condition and force insurance companies to cover gender reassignment surgery for transgendered people. Now, wait a second. Transgendered people don't generally undergo gender reassignment surgery, do they? It's non-transgendered people who want to transgender. Anyway, this gets all very confusing when you try to learn and study and read about what's happening in this particular community of deviants and perverts. It gets very confusing. So what they want to do is they want to force insurers to cover treatments for males and females who want to undergo gender reassignment surgery. I believe that's what they're trying to say here. They say that this new coverage will extend to all D.C. residents who have health insurance, including Medicaid. So if you're too poor, but you're gender dysphoric, I suppose you want to move to Washington, D.C. because you'll feel right at home. It'll be like entering the gates of Sodom with insurance. Yeah. Let's see. I have a quote. The mayor says, this action places the district at the forefront of advancing the rights of transgender individuals. Now, surprisingly enough, according to the Washington Times, the district now joins California, Colorado, Connecticut, Oregon, and Vermont in requiring such coverage for such bodily mutilation surgeries there. The Washington Times notes that gender reassignment surgery can cost tens of thousands of dollars, and reimbursements have been denied in the past by insurance companies because they deem the procedures cosmetic. I think they're more than cosmetic. I think they're deeply psychological. Deeply psychologically imbalanced. And any doctor who carries out such a surgery, such a mutilation of another obviously mentally ill human being, well, that surgeon should be arrested. Let's see. The homos say, I'm not sure which homo, but trust me, it's one of them. The homos say, quote, this isn't about who's paying for things. This is about whether or not it's medical care. And who gets to decide that?
Nobody in America wants their healthcare decisions made by insurance companies. Unquote. Well, we try to be fair and balanced here. Let the homos have their say. There you have it. Washington, D.C., inching ever closer to the rim of hell alongside Colorado, California, Connecticut, Oregon, and Vermont. There you have it. All going to hell in a handbasket. Speaking of science, we're going to go, of course, well, we were just quoting a Ugandan scientist, and I don't know if the mayor of D.C. is a scientist or not, but we go now to the science, really, file. Three MIT graduate students, according to The Guardian over in London, wrote a computer program that churned out gobbledygook and presented it as an academic paper. Well, the creators, well, the paper was accepted. And now the creators of this gobbledygook spewing computer program, Dan Aguayo and Maxwell Krohn, have made the program a free download, and scientists have been using it in droves. 16 gobbledygook papers created on these two fellows' program have been used by German academic publisher Springer. More than 100 other fake papers, gobbledygook, but they're all big words, multisyllabic with dashes and parentheses. You know, it all looks very official. These papers were published by the U.S. Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers. So both organizations say they are now taking steps to remove these gobbledygook papers that have been accepted and published by peer-reviewed journals and institutions. One of the programmers, Mr. Krohn, has now founded a startup that provides encryption to computer programmers, and he says, quote, "This ought to be a shock to people. There's this whole academic underground where everyone seems to benefit, but they're wasting time and money and adding absolutely nothing to science." He says, "These papers are so funny. You read them and you can't help but laugh." He says, "And I don't see this going away." So this is the state of science in the Western world now. Academic institutions desperate for grant money, who they have to publish a certain number of papers, they're just churning out gobbledygook. And I'm just thankful that at least the scientist who was advising President Museveni over there in Uganda, he wasn't spewing gobbledygook. He says homos are disgusting. Homos make me sick. It's a learned behavior. It's a perversion. And, well, that's the God's honest truth.
I started a joke, which started the whole world crying. Oh, but I didn't see that the joke was on me. Oh, no. And I started to cry, which started the whole world laughing. Oh, if I'd only seen that the joke was on me.
It's the Weekly Worldview. Very nice selection by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Kind of bringing it down into a more mellow mood there. From the hijinks there at the beginning of the show. But that is appropriate because we do have serious news on the personhood front. I'm going to start with a story from CNS News. We reported last week right here at the Weekly Worldview that a majority of black children in New York City are murdered in abortion clinics. More are murdered in abortion clinics than are actually born. Well, this week, and I believe that was CNS as well, you should go to CNSnews.com and just click and make a $5 donation because they're an outstanding news outfit. And I've donated to them, and I take stories down from them all the time, and I do my best to promote them. CNS is reporting that although whites outnumber blacks in Mississippi, that's people, by the way, although white people outnumber black people in Mississippi by nearly 2-1, 72% of babies murdered in abortion clinics in Mississippi are black. 72% of the murders in abortion clinics are carried out against black victims. 40,000 black babies, according to this new data published by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 40,000 black babies were killed by abortion in Mississippi between 1995 and 2010. Just another shocking statistic of where we are as a society. The amount of innocent blood that is being shed in this nation surely has gone up as a witness before the living God, and he is angry. How has he restrained himself from emptying his wrath upon this people? The boundless nature of his mercy is beyond understanding. Beyond understanding. And the founder of Planned Parenthood, were she not in the lowest part of hell and unable to hear or see anything except her own screams and pain, would be happy that 72% of the children murdered by abortionists in Mississippi are black, because that was the whole point of legalized abortion and birth control when Margaret Sanger first started out, was to eliminate the subhuman inferior races, pretty much anyone who wasn't white. And her plan is being executed there in Mississippi and obviously in New York, as we reported last year. It's horrifying. Only the reestablishment of the personhood of every innocent person, no matter what their state of disability or dependency, only that can help to change and to possibly assuage the furious anger of God in heaven. And now let's go to the domestic tranquility file. This is from Fox News. A newborn baby was barely breathing when it was found in a dumpster at an apartment complex last Tuesday morning in Houston. Yeah, the infant was discovered upside down in a trash bag by a maintenance man at the apartment complex after he heard the baby crying. The caretaker who found him is a grandfather, and he said, "It made a big impact on me." The child was reportedly found inside a bag with food leftovers and papers that appeared to be homework assignments with a student's name on them. So when the society devalues the value of human life in the womb to the point where it can be casually murdered, well, this is the result. And of course, the baby found in a dumpster, this isn't a shocking headline across the country as it should be. It happens every day, probably more than once a day, every day, in every state in America. It's disgusting. Thank God that maintenance worker found this child. That last report, the child it was in the hospital, but the baby was doing fine. Authorities are trying to locate the baby's parents. And then execute them, says my extremely upset audio engineer. All right. So anyway, I just said that only personhood is, and I hope that's right, because I'm a supporter of changing the law to recognize that every innocent person has unalienable rights endowed by God: life, liberty, property. This is from National Review. Cecile Richards, who is the president of Planned Parenthood, told an interviewer last Thursday, when she was asked when she thought life begins, she said, quote, "I don't know if it's really relevant to the conversation." She doesn't think it's relevant to the conversation. My fear has always been that even if we were to restore legally recognized personhood for all innocent human beings, that our adversary would simply admit, yes, we know it's a person. Yes, we admit it's a human being. Yes, we'll We'll admit it's a child, it's a baby, but we want to kill it anyway. We want to kill them anyway. And Cecile Richards pretty much just said it right here. She goes on to say that, she doesn't know if it's relevant to the conversation about abortion, that is, when life begins. She also said that, in her view, life began for her three children when she delivered them. Ensconcing herself as the only mother to have delivered a child in human history to ever utter that phrase, as far as I know. What other mother ever thought that life for their child didn't begin when they felt it kicking and hiccuping and all of that? I mean, how evil is this woman? This is a black-hearted, evil, demonic, murderous, bloodthirsty killer. But she did explain that the purpose of her organization is not to answer questions that will be debated through the centuries, but to provide options for pregnant women. Now, Planned Parenthood does not provide options. They provide abortions and abortifacients and birth control, any way they can choke off or slaughter the next generation. They're mad, sex-crazed, and ultimately suicidal children who have their hands on the levers of authority in civil society. It's unbelievable. It's shocking, and it should be disgusting, and frankly, it's terrifying to think that there is a living God, just and mighty and righteous. And another bit of evidence that his mercies are beyond comprehension. The limits of his mercies I cannot comprehend. All right. Meanwhile, while America obsesses about homos and sex and killing babies, the slow news week continued around the world. Story from USA Today, Iran is moving ahead with a nuclear program that U.S. officials said would be frozen. And it is now clear that the USA and other world powers are willing to accept an Iranian enrichment program that Iran refuses to abandon. Its stockpile of enriched uranium has actually grown. That's right. Even though the Barry and Kerry show came back with their landmark historic agreement, a paper in my hand, signed by the Führer to give us peace in our time. Despite all that, put Mr. Chamberlain away. We may need him. Well, don't pack him away too far, because we may need him again soon. But despite all that, the stockpile of uranium grows. Advancements toward nuclear weapons continue in Iran. And with the easing of sanctions, Iran's economy has begun a modest recovery, according to this report. Analysts say that the improvements in Iran's economy makes a comprehensive deal less likely, that they're advancing their nuclear program, moving ahead, and with the improvement in their economy, well, there's just no reason for them to stop. Benjamin Netanyahu, Israeli Prime Minister, said that any agreement that allows Iran to keep the machinery to make nuclear fuel would be a mistake. And, of course, that agreement was signed by Iran and Neville Kerry and Barry Chamberlain there. And it is a mistake. It was a mistake. It continues to be a mistake. And by golly, I think it's going to get someone killed eventually. All right. More from the slow news week. Yes, you remember the president in the White House was busy issuing statements against the Ugandan president and his efforts to criminalize the crime of homosexual behavior and advocacy. So it was such a slow news week, they didn't have much else to talk about. Over there in Beijing, according to McClatchy, a knife-wielding gang carried out an attack Saturday evening at a rail station, killing at least 33 people and injuring over 100. And the Chinese president has issued a directive calling for authorities to, quote, severely punish these violent terrorists, unquote. Yes, terrorists. You read on in the story, authorities say evidence at the crime scene showed that the railway station terrorist attack was carried out by Xinjiang separatist forces. And that's all I've heard reported on the TV news, in the mainstream media. Well, these are separatists. Well, according to McClatchy, if you read far enough down in the article, Xinjiang is populated by Uyghurs, which are Turkic Muslims. So yet another Muslim separatist group, a terrorist attack carried out. And, I had no idea that so many of these attacks had occurred in China, but apparently they've occurred at a fairly steady pace over the past few years. And this is one of the worst that has occurred. But you heard it here first. Yes, the terrorists were Muslims. And we will continue now with our slow news week. We'll go over to Ukraine. We've all seen it, right? What's been happening all this past several months, actually, in Ukraine that erupted in violence this past week. And the president was driven from office and all that. I wasn't really able to comment on it last week because I don't follow Ukrainian politics or Russian politics or the Uyghurs or the nationalists or any, but I did a little studying on it. I've got a report here from RT. A leader of a Ukrainian racist nationalist socialist group, Dmitry Yarosh, has called on Russia's most wanted Muslim terrorist, Doku Umarov, to join with him and act against Russia. And he posted that on social media. He says, quote, many Ukrainians with arms in their hands support the Chechen militants in their fight against Russia, and it's time to support Ukraine now. So we have the Nazis in Ukraine calling upon the Islamists in Chechnya and the Caucasus to join with them to fight against Russia. And this explains to me who those people were in the protest camp who had the shields, the helmets, the gloves, the guns, the Molotov cocktails. Now I understand. I think what you've got is a bunch of pro-democracy, deluded, foolish children, college students, gathered together in the square begging to join the European Union so they can all fornicate and sodomize one another openly and freely. And their little peaceful gathering was hijacked by racist nationalist socialists who want to fight. They want to fight Russia. That's all they want. And who knows if we'll find out that it was all funded by the girl Troika at the White House out the back door through the State Department. That'll all come out in the wash eventually. Well, RT reports that during the recent riots in Ukraine, Yarosh, the racist nationalist socialist, rejected any negotiations with the Ukrainian government, calling on his supporters to defy the truces. You remember there was a truce, and then the next morning there was more violence. And we wondered, why would these college students, when they were offered a truce, why would they start throwing bombs and shooting people? Well, it's because the National Socialists have infiltrated and hijacked these foolish children. Well-equipped, masked rioters often use clubs, gasoline, bombs, and firearms against the Ukrainian police. RT reports that Western powers have largely ignored the actions of the right-wing groups. Well, they say right-wing. I don't say that. I call them National Socialists because they're nationalists and they're socialists. And we remember where National Socialism leads, do we not? Hopefully we do. Western powers have largely ignored the actions of these groups and persisted with describing the protests in Ukraine as peaceful. Well, RT obviously is a mouthpiece of Vladimir Putin and the Russian government. Nobody was able to call these protests peaceful after the Molotov cocktails and the bullets started to fly. But they did consistently blame the Ukrainian authorities. And the unfortunate thing here is I think there's just no good guy. It's like the Russian front. The Ukrainian government is a corrupt kleptocracy run by the mafia. And the National Socialists, the Nazi types, the racists, they're no good. The Islamists are waiting in the wings. And the foolish children who want to fornicate, well, they're just going to be slaughtered. And that's a question I would ask this week. I mean, are we marching to Bastille Day? It's a little nerve-wracking out there. It's almost as if somebody wants to foment violence, and they're having a good job. It also could be that there are enormous economic pressures on large populations around the world, because while the Western media doesn't want to report it because they don't want to undermine the reputations of the socialist children who've taken over, the world has been in a global depression since 2007, 2008. And when the richest countries in the world are in what we call a recession, the Great Recession, stagnant economy, people in the less developed worlds, there's enormous pressure being exerted economically by the situation upon vast populations who are becoming ever more tense and concerned about their future. And this makes the field ripe for the racists, the nationalists, the socialists, the killers and the murderers, the gangsters, to incite violence for their own purposes. And that's what I'm afraid is going on. I said I had a story from Egypt related to Ukraine. Over in Egypt, according to this story from McClatchy, Washington, Egypt's war against the Muslim Brotherhood has become an opportunity to settle personal scores quickly by falsely charging someone with being a Brotherhood member. The widespread detention of those falsely accused is creating a jail system overwhelmed with prisoners held in appalling conditions, often alongside real jihadists, as well as murderers and other criminals. So what happens when chaos erupts is people tend to use it to settle scores and to, well, frankly, to murder their enemies. Because when chaos reigns, evil people will take advantage. And that's what's happening in Egypt. If you hate someone, or maybe you want his business, you accuse him of being a Muslim Brotherhood member, get him arrested. Maybe you even incite violence against him on the street and have him murdered in the street, and cover it up with the story that he was an Islamist. Well, one thing I can tell you is that situations like this throughout history, whether in the Middle East, the Near East, in Europe, have always been an occasion for one thing that stands out in my mind. And that's the ability of discontented people to start killing Jews. And I'm afraid that's what awaits the Jewish populations in Eastern Europe and Ukraine if order is not restored quickly. So I have a concern for the Jews, because these things often lead to wholesale pogroms and slaughters of the Jews. They have in the past, and history it has been known to repeat itself. So I'm very concerned. And I don't think I have anything against the Russians restoring order to Ukraine. I don't think. I know the Russians aren't the good guys, but the Ukrainians aren't the good guys. And the National Socialists there, they're not the good guys. The Islamists are not the good guys. Russia is the least bad amongst a very bad lot. And Russia will probably have to restore order there, unless John Kerry decides to put his uniform back on and declare war on Russia. I've got a story here from CNN. John Kerry, Secretary of State, has denounced Russian President Vladimir Putin, calling his actions in the Crimea, calling it an invasion, and saying, quote, "All options are on the table as far as a U.S. response." Well, he was pressed on this because John Kerry was affected by the Susan Rice effect this week. He went on three different networks, apparently, this morning while you and I were at church like normal people. He was on three networks, and he was asked, what options? All options? All options are on the table, Mr. Kerry. My, that's a bold statement. Said that little weasel on, "Well, that's a bold statement, Mr. Kerry. Could you elaborate on that?" said Chris Wallace. as he was shucking and jiving and winking, having a good time while the world burns. People are destroyed and killed. We're just here at Fox News, fair and balanced. What can you elaborate on that, Mr. Kerry? All options. Wow. So Kerry said options include these. Visa bans, asset freezes, isolation by the international community on trade and investment, as well as Russia losing its spot on the G8. And we very well may cancel Vladimir Putin's birthday, said John Kerry. Nowhere in here did he mention military force. And you know why? Because Barry and Kerry wet their pants when they're in the room with Vladimir Putin. So the one thing we don't have to worry about here in America is American troops going to war. Because Barry and Kerry will be in the corner shivering, hugging each other, and trying to clean up the wet on the floor if Vladimir Putin decides to exercise further military action, which I don't think he'll have to do. I think Vlad will pretty much be able to roll through, and he'll crush the Nazis, and he'll scare the students, and he'll reinstall his cadre of mafioso, and should be able to restore things. So John Kerry says he's going to Kiev this week. Well, that's what he says. Says he's going to go there. For what? I'm not sure. But just to make things more, to build more tension? I don't understand. Mr. Kerry. Anyway, I would stay home, Mr. Kerry, because we as Americans don't want to be embarrassed by you going over to Ukraine. That's the last thing we need. All right. What we need, what the United States government should be doing is making statements to calm the situation instead of trying to rile up the Russians. But we'll see what the Barry and Kerry show decides to do. They may want a little more chaos, you know, for some reason. I think that John Kerry and Barry Ho are of the same ilk, raised to believe that the hippies of the 60s in America were the height of civilization and human evolution and everything, and that violence in the streets and protesting against the government and throwing Molotov cocktails is somehow some glorious, wonderful thing. And maybe they just like it, and so they're okay with it. And so they help foment it in all these places. They're just irresponsible children at their heart, but they could be stupid enough to stumble into a shooting war with the Russians. It's possible. It's totally possible. All right. So let's move from that, all the events of the slow news week. We'll move into our entertainment file, Jane Fonda. Yes, the entertainment file, very rarely used file, very thin. Jane Fonda wrote on her blog, Her latest blog post, maybe not the latest, but a blog post was entitled Crying. I said crying. She says, I have become so wonderfully, terribly aware of time and how little of it I have left. Yeah, Jane Fonda is 76 years old and is rapidly approaching the judgment. Yeah, you read that line in the Bible? It is appointed to man once to die and then the judgment. Well, Hillary. I'm sorry, Freudian slip there. Jane Fonda is in the latter part of that statement. Then the judgment, she's almost there. She wrote, today I was at a friend's baby shower. She's 7 months pregnant and looking radiant. It was a wonderful party. I hadn't seen her since she was pregnant, and as soon as I saw her with her gorgeous belly, I just started crying. Then her mother spoke, giving words of wisdom to the young mother and the rest of us about how to raise a baby, and I started crying again because I wanted to go back and do my own raising of my own kids all over again. Anyway, Jane Fonda coming to grips with her own mortality. And the reason this story caught my attention is because I am like this. Now, I'm not 76 yet, but I'm old enough to now start really realizing that I'm over the hill. I'm on the downward slope. I'm more than all grown up. And pondering one's own mortality is, it's a disconcerting thing. And for, and even for someone like me, and I know where I'm going when I die. I know who God is, and I know his son, Jesus Christ, will be faithful to me. And he will save me from the fire, and he will sustain my life after I depart this mortal coil. But can you imagine for Jane Fonda? I know she had that semi-conversion a while back, but it didn't really seem to take. So she's very confused. And she's got to be struggling with what's going to happen to her when she does depart. Well, I guess the one thing we can hope for Jane, and well, we know that it is true generally, is that facing imminent death often helps people to come to grips with the fact that there is a God and that they're not him and that they need him. And who knows? I guess we'll find out in the hereafter if in Jane Fonda's case, the death penalty worked. Are you ready? Are you ready? I'm ready. Judgment Day's coming. Judgment Day's coming. There is a God, and you're going to meet him. Are you ready? Well, we're doing what we can to get you all ready. All you people, I hope. All right, now, more from the war file. I'm going to do it as I had it laid out here. More from the war file. Story from Fox News in D.C., the Army has opened up combat jobs to women. Big announcement, you remember? It was huge news. John Kerry and, Barry Ho and his M.O. and all the feminists were slobbering all over each other, saying how wonderful it was to open up combat jobs to women so that women could go into combat. Put on your Army boots and go into combat like a man. Yeah, you know how to be a real woman? Act like a man. Get out there. Fix bayonets.
What?
I said fix bayonets. What's that? Well, that's something you do when you're going into combat. My extremely attractive audio engineers have never had an interest in combat.
I'm sorry.
And that's good. That makes you normal. I appreciate it. One of the reasons that I stay with her, the number one reason is that she's willing to stay with me. Number two is that she has no interest in a combat role in the military. Well, now that the floodgates have opened, as you can well imagine, women are applying for combat positions at a rate never before seen in military history. Well, actually, I made that up. The story from the AP says only a small fraction of Army women say they'd like to move into one of the newly opening combat jobs. There was a survey recently, and it revealed that soldiers of both genders are nervous about women entering combat. Men are worried about losing their jobs to women, and women are worried that they will be seen as getting jobs because of their gender. Yes, so this social experiment is a complete disaster on all fronts. And that's all it ever was a social experiment designed to injure the United States military, which I think that the leftists, amongst whom Barry Ho is the highest order, along with Chuck Hagel, all of those people, they're hell-bent on damaging the United States military and degrading our military power. And so they've done this, and it's a disaster. Both sexes in the Army and in the military are emphatic
that the Army must not lower standards to accommodate women, but everybody's worried on all sides that that's exactly what's going to happen. Anyway, less than 8% of Army women who responded to the survey said that they wanted a combat job. So the feminists finally get their dream of opening up combat jobs to women, and the women look at them a bit askew and say, "What? You want me to do what? Fix bayonets? Are you crazy? I want to get money for college." I mean, that's the way half the men in the Army feel. I know one thing I thought about when I was sitting in the barracks when something would happen around the world. I remember thinking, man, I hope I don't have to go and shoot people and get shot at. Now, I didn't join the military to get college money. I joined the military so I could escape McCamey, Texas. And in retrospect, at least that first morning in boot camp, I remember thinking, McCamey actually wasn't that bad. Anyway, I just wanted to see the world, and I wanted to have adventure and all that, and the last thing I wanted to do was kill or be killed. I didn't want any of that. Anyway, that's why I was not a lifer. I got out. So anyway, women are not signing up in droves for these combat jobs, and so the feminists must be sorely disappointed. And I would not be surprised if they insist that the Army set up quotas and counseling sessions to counsel women into combat jobs, because the feminists are not happy unless women are being killed. Yes, I said it. That's what I believe. I believe that abortion is the spiritual murder of a mother and the literal physical murder of a child. And abortion is the sacrament in the feminist religion. And they would like nothing better than to add another sacrament of women on the front lines being machine gunned. They're sick, murderous children. Anyway, that I just want to say that I'm actually encouraged for civilization that women are not signing up for combat jobs, that most women are normal, and they don't want to kill their fellow man nor be shot at. That's the normal state of being. All right. Okay, here's something that's not nearly as controversial or anything like that, I don't think. This is in the Science Really file. Yes. Drone ships. Rolls-Royce is designing unmanned cargo ships. They recently set up a virtual reality prototype at their office in Norway that simulates 360-degree views from a vessel's bridge. Eventually, the Rolls-Royce says captains on dry land will use control centers and joysticks and screens to command hundreds of crewless ships. I think this is amazing. When I first heard an article about the driverless car, I remember thinking there will come a time, probably in the lifetime of my grandchildren, when they'll sit on my knee and they'll say, "Grandpa, did you really used to have to drive a car yourself?" And now the shipping industry, can you imagine not having to put a crew on a ship? Can you imagine how much that would reduce shipping costs? No crews on trains, no drivers in trucks. Can you imagine? Now, all you truck drivers out there, I know you'd be nervous about this. In fact, the opposition to the drone ships, the opposition is amongst unions. Unions don't like this idea, because they make their living parasitically off of laborers, people doing work. They don't actually do any work. They push paper and file lawsuits, molest their secretaries, the union chiefs. But they parasitically make their living, and it's a good living, off people actually doing work. And their concern is that all these workers will be thrown out of work, and what will we do? Anyway, for anybody out there driving a truck, trust me, when the driverless truck comes out, there will be some opening and some other wonderful opportunity for you that you'll be able to take advantage of. Just like the guy who used to crack the whip on the old horse buggy. Well, he didn't just roll into a corner and starve to death. He found something else to do, and something even more fulfilling, hopefully. If you're a positive person, you can find something else to do. But the union slugs, they're upset about this. They're upset about safety. How safe will this be? And how much will this cost?
Anyway, there are a number of other regulatory hurdles. But the interesting thing about technology and the human endeavor is that despite the desires of those of us who are locked in a particular doxy technologically, you know, like I feel like I have to drive myself, and truck drivers feel like they have to drive their trucks, it doesn't matter what we think. It doesn't matter how we feel. It doesn't matter how much we want to continue to do things the way we want to do things. When the technology presents itself, we'll have no choice. You'll have to find something else to do. That's all. And hopefully it'll be something good and productive for mankind. All right, now finally, we're going to go to the justice file and a report from Breitbart. So have you heard these people? And if you live in Colorado, you hear them all the time. They call into radio stations and they're like, you know, man, marijuana, it never hurt anybody, dude. I mean, you might eat some extra Cheetos or something, you know, or you might sleep late. But you know what, man? It's not as bad as alcohol. It's bad, man. So, you know, what were we talking about, man? Anyway, you hear them calling the radio stations regularly because we've legalized dope here in Colorado, so it's a topic of it's a topic that's bantered about quite regularly on the radio. And you hear these people who say, "Well, marijuana doesn't hurt anyone. It's not as dangerous as alcohol, and I'm glad we legalized it, and glad we're making tax revenues off it, and we're normalizing a marijuana," and then all the pot smokers are happy about it. And there's nobody happier about it than the politicians. And they're willing to indulge these stupid potheads and say, yeah, man, it's fine, dude, it's cool. Because there's nothing the politicians want more than a doped-up, stupid, uneducated populace so that they can continue to rob you blind. Right? Well, anyway, story in Breitbart. Currently, one of nine drivers involved in fatal crashes would test positive for marijuana. A director of the Center for Injury, Epidemiology, and Prevention at Columbia says if this trend continues, in 5 or 6 years, non-alcohol drugs will overtake alcohol to become the most common substance involved in deaths related to impaired driving. And here's the crux of it. While alcohol-related traffic fatalities remain steady at 40% throughout the early 2000s, drug-related deaths soared from 16% to 28% from 1999 to 2010. And that's a 300% increase. So for all you potheads who say marijuana never hurt anyone, keep in mind that just because we legalize dope doesn't mean that people are going to stop getting drunk and driving and doing all the other stupid things that people do. And now you've simply added insult to injury by legalizing a substance that impairs people even further. And people are being hurt, they're being injured, and they're being killed. And that's just on top of the sapping of the will and the spirit of the people that all these drugs, marijuana, cocaine, methamphetamine, all the other drugs, they sap the will and the spirit of the people. And they make people losers. So on top of them making people losers, they're also going to get people hurt, injured, and killed, despite the fact that Cheech and Chong led you to believe that everything was okay. Everything was just fine. Is that all we have? That's all we have, ladies and gentlemen. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. My name is Doug McBurney, my extremely attractive audio engineer by my side. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen, here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. As I said, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.